Now, here's noted columnist and respected authority on the world of fishing, Michael Shepard.
The Mid-Atlantic Council just approved a slot option. Atlantic States Marines had a slot option, but that's only out 3 miles. But in this last meeting in December, Mid-Atlantic passed the option for a slot.
Oh, really?
Yeah. On a fluke.
On fluke, yeah.
Wow, that sounds exciting.
Yeah. Now, but the problem with that is, you know, it will have an impact on a number of days. It could have an impact on the number of days we're fishing because they'll be taking more fish out of the water.
Yeah.
So it's going to be interesting how they deal with that, but the option is there. In the past, the ASMFC said they, even though they gave the option, made the option available, they couldn't take it seriously because it couldn't go out beyond the 3 mile limit.
Yeah.
But now with the Mid-Atlantic in agreement, we'll see what happens.
Yeah. So it's a step in the right direction, without doubt.
Yeah. and the decision on fluke will not be. The options will not be made available until February.
Yeah. How about the Modern Fish Act that
passed?
That passed, got through the Congress, right?
It's headed to the President.
To the Senate.
Senate passed it.
Oh, the Senate passed it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Late yesterday, I guess.
So that was the goal. That was the timeline. That was the deadline we had to
beat,
right?
The Senate revised it, and it went back to the House. The House passed it. It's on its way to the President.
Okay. Give an insight to people who's actually listened to.
Go ahead.
About what's that about a little bit?
Well, the industry's totally behind it, but it looks like it loosens up the regulations a little bit, gives them a little more flexibility in the regulations. It's primarily directed at redfish, or not redfish, but yeah, redfish. It's guff fish, okay. But there could be some benefit to the northern lake. Well, I don't know how that's going to work out. We'll have to see how it all develops, because now the two agencies now have a few different rules to live by. So they were consistently saying, well, we're restricted by the Megason Act. Well, the Megason Act now has a little more flexibility in it. So we'll see what happens. I've been pushing slot fish for 8 years.
Yes, you have.
I brought it up to the Marine Council because, they had the ASMFC gave them the option a couple years ago, but because the Mid-Atlantic didn't have that option, they didn't go for it. And in any event, you know, I think it opens up the opportunity for somebody to take a fish home.
Here, Robin, put one of them in your pocket. Pocketbook.
Right.
Right now, you go out and spend $100 to go fishing or whatever, and you fish all day and you can't get a keeper, or you might get one keeper. Economics doesn't work. You're not going to go fishing if you can't. Most people aren't going to go fishing if you can't take something home.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
I agree.
And fishing's expensive. I mean, it's not a... not a cheap sport anymore.
It's not golf.
Yeah.
I mean, you can buy a boat for less than the entry.
Golf.
Yeah, or the country club admission. Right?
There has to be some relaxation to open up this industry. The industry's dying. I mean, you look at what charter boats are left and what tackle shops are left.
Yeah, well, you know what it boils down to, Bill? The laws and regulations, how they read.
Oh, yeah.
You know, look at the charter situation. Before, back in the day, Captain Applegate and all these other guys in Atlantic City that they used to be here. And what happened was they put so many laws and regulations that the captains get fed up and just go to another state.
Yeah.
Usually to Florida.
Yeah. So, or just get out of the business entirely.
Exactly.
I had this. Do something else.
Whoever they is doesn't care about the fishing industry is the issue as I see it. You know, there's money coming from other sources
now. Are they
now.
People in authority?
Whoever they are, yes, the theys. I mean, what do you think, Bill? If you care about something that is the second biggest industry in the state, you're going to do everything you possibly can to preserve it.
I'm going to get in trouble now.
Go. We want you in trouble.
Given the administration that's in power right now.
Right, in New Jersey.
In New Jersey. Mm-hmm. I don't expect to see anything change.
No.
Now we
wow, that's sharp
we
word.
had a major change there when we took on the regulations and stuck with the 18-inch fish, which upset every state on the East Coast. But they got it done. Okay, you're not going to get that kind of effort under the current administration. So we're looking at, in my mind, 4 years of stagnant nothing. That's just my opinion. I'm probably in big trouble for saying it. There is a possibility of a 11 to 14% increase on flounder next year. That's going to depend on what happens with the wave six numbers, on which we won't know until January.
Yeah.
So it'll be February before we get any indication of which direction they're going to go with flounder. In sea bass, the best we can hope for in sea bass is it's the same as this year.
Yeah.
Because they're talking about the sea bass population going down. And I don't know.
From the increase of 231% that we had, it's going down from that.
Well, 220 or something, right?
Yeah.
If you listen to them, they say that that population is up there, but that the majority of that population is going to die off. And then I see these guys with 4, 6, 7 pound sea bass, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. The data collection, as you know, is so frustrating. It's pathetic. And you know, they're not talking to people that are on the water.
Has first-hand accounts of that stuff. Yeah.
Well, it's not accurate. I mean, my gripe with it is my business is being dictated by a data collection system that was never designed to base the fishery decisions on. It was a random thing that was going to be nice. I mean, I would base my business on your statistics, Bill. I would not base it on these nice initials we call EMRIC.
But you got to remember that the numbers I have are pretty isolated because they're inherited. Yeah,
what we're talking about is the American Littoral Society count.
Yeah, if you take that all that data and you take data from that the charter captains have to turn in after every trip.
Yes,
they're not using that.
That's
great numbers.
That's astonishing.
And the thing goes the way I view it. Everything goes to these scientific professors. And if you ask them how many days they spend on the water fishing, you won't get very many days.
No.
They look at numbers, and you can make a number do whatever you want it to do.
Well, the ALA statistics counter what they're using. So obviously they're not going to use them, but, they're the real numbers. And the charter captains.
Yeah.
That's the clinical application of what we're talking about.
If they don't turn their numbers, the charter captains don't turn their numbers in after every trip, they get fined.
Right.
But they're not using the data effectively. Really? They use pieces of it, but they don't. They should be able to use it. If they can use the EMRIC data in total, they should be able to use the charter captains data in total.
What does EMRIC stand for, Bill? I'm just asking you for the... For our listeners,
I got it someplace.
MRIK or something like that. But basically, it needs hiring part-time young people to come out and sit in their cell phones, while people come in with fish.
Collecting data, so forth.
Whatever data.
Yeah. EMRIC Maritime Research Information Center. Is that
it? Say it again.
The Maritime Research Information Center?
Yeah.
You rock, Holly. What a producer. Oh, my goodness. Ask and you shall receive. Look at that.
On point.
Yeah.
It wasn't designed to set regulations.
No. Yeah. How was it designed originally?
It was a sampling design to track track fish populations,
mm-hmm.
not to set regulations.
Right.
And they're using it now. This is the second version. They said it's continuing to get improved, but they're still not getting real data from real fishermen.
Yeah.
Until they bring it in and say, hey, 18-inch flounder are female breeders. Let's not target them. Then whatever data they're using is wrong, right?
Noel, you never see anybody like that, right? Come in the store and say how many fish
came
in.
The state came in last year. They gave me a piece of paper, Satan. Can you, get the species down, the length, the girth, and stuff like that?
Yeah. Oh, do they?
Yeah. So you got to send that information in if you want to. But, you get caught up in the moment, and that you're taking care of customers and doing this and doing that, and you forget to do something.
Yeah, like next day, sure.
So it's
right.
They showed up in my marina, I guess it was last year, the year before, and They walked down
Whale Creek.
Yeah, they walked down the dock, and they only stopped to talk to people that had fish. Those that didn't have any fish, they didn't even talk to.
Yeah, but if you ask them, they say they want to know whether you caught fish or not. But if you were out there, you know, why didn't you go fishing? What did you catch? Well, I got 2 blowfish, 4 sea bass. I threw them all back, of course, but you need to know what's out there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They don't do that.
Yeah. I keep telling the stories on the Longport Bridge one time, and a guy came up and looked and thought that the tog I had, and they were sea bass.
Oops.
But, oops. this is like 20 years ago now, so, I mean, it's changed vastly. Different since then, but I have to admit that did happen once.
With the change, the passing of the Megason Stevens revision, mm-hmm. we might see a little bit of relief.
Yeah,
I mean that's been what the Atlantic States guys have been saying. They blame everything on the Megason Stevens. We can't do this because we can't do this because
it's a federal law.
So now they got some relief, and maybe we'll see some results of that.
All right, that goes to the president's desk now?
He's got to sign it.
He's got to sign it before the end of the year?
The end of the year, yeah. I don't think that'll be a problem.
Yeah.
To paraphrase Adam Nowalski, who's our rep on everything, pretty much, the way I gathered it, he said that we have been essentially managing the fishery for 10 years. And in the 10 years we've been managing the fishery, the summer flounder population has been almost depleted. So before we did that, according to Bill's statistics, at 13 inches all the way up to 17, growing.
I'm older than dirt, so I go all the way back when the size...
you're not that old.
The size limit went in, which is in the 80s, and it went in at 13 inches and 10 fish.
Right.
The population grew from there to 95, I guess it was 95 or 96, every year but one. And when it hit 17 and a half, by their numbers, the population flattened out. And since 18 inches went in and 19 in New York, the population's going down.
19-inch fish, wow.
Yeah, well, because, you know, we're taking the prime breeders out of the water. Since 1995, the total population of flounder, by using the MERS report, the population has gone down steadily since 17.5-inch size limit went in.
Wow.
Prior to the 17.5-inch size limit, which went back to started in 83 or 84 at 13 inches and 10 fish, every year after that, even though they increased the size limit to 15, 16, 16.5, and so forth, all the way up until 17.5, the population came back because it was down in the dumps, okay? But at 17.5, it flattened out. 18, it's going down. It's been going down since then.
Captain Paul Eidman, is that how you say your name, Paul?
Yeah, hi, Shep. I'm here.
Fine. How you doing? You're the captain of the Real Therapy?
I run a small charter boat up here in Sandy Hook, New Jersey.
Sandy Hook. Okay, that's where I couldn't quite figure out where. You were sending me some stuff on a wind energy management.
I really thank you for the opportunity to get the message out, you know, and get anglers to attend some of these meetings so they can participate in, you know, in the siting of these wind turbine platforms. This is really more of a public information session. So this panel gives out information based on public's questions. It's kind of in a seminar kind of way, and they have a variety of different people. You know, the hottest topic that they discussed, unfortunately, was not fishing, but it was jobs, you know, and what this would do for New Jersey. And, you know, that's more of an on-the-land perspective, but that's what a lot of people care about. They care about, you know, these companies coming in and using employees based out of New Jersey. You know, we wanted to bring jobs into our area because we need it.
How about there is some controversy concerning the fishing aspects of this. Did you get, say, negative or positive comment from the fishing community?
Honestly, there weren't a lot of fishermen, either commercial or recreational fishermen present.
That's a shame.
I represent a group called the Anglers for Offshore Wind Power, and that's a project of the National Wildlife Federation, and I'm the New Jersey Recreational Fisheries Advocate. So it's my job to, you know, get fishermen the information and resources that they need to play a part and just make sure that the wind farms are developed responsibly. You know, we really need to make sure that that habitat and other matters are addressed during this period. And you know, everybody that fishes, especially the small boat crowd, should participate.
Paul, the main things that I'm concerned about, obviously, is that the recreational and commercial fishery be represented in this. And obviously, you're knowledgeable and have done your research. The main question is how much is being done as far as seismic studies, height of the towers, the effect on. There are several species that I'm aware of that are very much affected: cod, sea turtles, right whales, and sharks, as far as their migratory patterns. And I know this is a lot of information, but Germany apparently has the most mature and greatest number of wind farms and are being used as a basis for a lot of the decisions and statistics. So fill us in on, you know, what's being done to protect the fish and the fishery and the jobs that we have in New Jersey.
First and foremost, what you have going on the ocean floor are what they call lease areas. And a lease area is an area that has been set aside by a federal agency called BOEM. Okay, that's the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management. And they're basically the landlord. Okay, they're not in state waters, but they're in waters from 3 miles to 200 miles offshore, what we fishermen normally call the EEZ. Okay, so several years ago, I want to say it's got to be 12 years ago, they started slating out areas for WEAs, which is a wind energy area. So in terms of where you are, you're going to have, I guess it's called Hudson South, which is pretty much Barnegat to Margate, and then there's another smaller rectangle in that. And that's going to be about 10 miles off, you know, pretty much off of like Harvey Cedars area down to Hereford Inlet. Okay. And those are going to be two specific wind energy areas. And to get back to your question, so what they're doing is they specifically sited these areas so that they're out of bird migration routes. And that's a critical factor, because we all live along this coast, and this happens to be the Atlantic Flyway, and the birds migrate from the Arctic Circle all the way down to South America right along our coast. So we obviously don't want these towers directly in line with the birds. And as far as marine mammals and sharks and everything goes, that's more of a during the construction type of concern. So that's another question. And then you mentioned some type of seismic testing. And while they do seismic testing for oil exploration and natural gas exploration, they don't use seismic testing specifically or seismic blasting for site exploration for offshore wind. That's more of a sonar type of operation, because they don't have to go that far into the ocean floor like you would if you were looking for oil. So the impacts are far less. The sound that you're referring to would most likely be during construction, when they're putting pilings in or setting the footings for the platforms. And this is the same type of platform that you would build, like in the Gulf of Mexico, for example. Does that help your little bit?
The only thing I thought of is, you know, the birds. You know, these flocks of birds that fly through, they don't fly at exactly the same place all the time. I mean, they might be 5 miles inshore, depending on the wind and conditions, stuff like that. So there's not a – just occurred right to me that there's not a lane. They don't have a flying lane, or because they just seem to be maybe all over the place.
Well, they actually do have a lane. So what they do is they use radar and heat maps to not only to plan out where the birds are, but they use the same thing for ship and boat activity on the water. So over time, you can map out exactly where things happen over the ocean. It's fascinating, and honestly, I'm learning all about this as I go. I mean, I'm only a fisherman, And, you know, I dove headfirst into this, and it's very, very exciting to be a part of this, because obviously, you know, pollution from fossil fuels is harming our fishing in a lot of different ways. And this is a clean energy source, and ultimately it can benefit fishing, but it has to be done right. So I'm a big fan of marine mammals and whales and dolphins. And the last thing I would want is to see these creatures harmed in any way.
Yeah.
You know, and there's talk of all types of sighting devices and underwater gliders being used during construction to determine if any marine mammals, especially the right whale, which is endangered, if they are present in the area. You know, so they would halt construction completely if that were to occur.
You know, and obviously my bent is that we explore this thoroughly, because you can't undo towers that, you know, can go from 600 to 1,000 feet high. A couple things that you talked about, fossil fuels. Now, in Germany, they actually had to start rebuilding coal plants because they had brownouts, and the wind doesn't always blow. They have people now that are called energy poor, because offshore wind power is expensive, even with subsidies. And since the wind farms don't work constantly, for every megawatt of wind power, you need a megawatt of natural gas. So my only bent is that people are fully informed of exactly what's going on. This, I think, this particular fact is funny. I have a very dear friend who is a Delaware River pilot. And, of course, being a captain, you know what that entails. That's like a seven-year apprenticeship after you've driven tour boats with 3,500 people all over the world. Now, according to a brand-new Harvard study just out, wind farms warm the globe more than the current global warming trajectory of 1 degree in the next 100 years. They're saying that if they make as many wind farms as people are saying, it will actually warm the interior of the U.S. by multiple degrees. But back to the Delaware River, the electric current produced by a 600-megawatt electric cable, as would be running from the wind farms, can actually deviate shipping compasses at the surface. And this I was howling at. If we have oil tankers entering the Delaware Bay using compasses, that's probably going to reduce the safety. So there you can see, and you're delving into it, as are we, there are a million avenues that really have to be explored before we jump into this and make assumptions that it's going to happen.
Recently, by the way, I went up to the only wind farm there is in the United States, and that right now is powering Block Island.
Right.
It's powering 17,000 homes and businesses right off of Rhode Island. And I went out up there. I went on a party boat, and we went black sea bass fishing. And it was incredible. You know, it was October, and the winds were nasty, but I was really happy to be there instead of on my little boat back here. And we were, you know, very, very close. You're allowed to get right up to the turbines, by the way. There's no access issues whatsoever. I was using, you know, braided line in 90 feet of water. We dropped down like double clam rigs, and black sea bass and porgies were stacked up around the pilings. And we had an awesome time. We were catching double headers. And these things are very, very majestic. Yes, they are, you know, 500-something feet tall, but the foundations act as an artificial reef structure that creates habitat below. And it wasn't 2 months after these were built in 2016 that, you know, the mussel growth and all kinds of other living creatures attach themselves to the base and attract, you know, everything from cod to scup to black sea bass to tautog. You know, everything just, you know, it goes right up the food chain. So at the base of each one of these, you're going to have like a little micro ecosystem or an actual artificial reef. It's very, very similar to what has happened over 50 years in the Gulf of Mexico. And each one of these reefs or these towers, these platforms, becomes a magnet for game fish, you know. And a small tackle shop owner is going to sell, you know, a ton of, you know, much more rigs, much more tackle, especially, I mean, where you guys are, these things are going to be 10 miles off the beach. You know, and there's not a lot of structure off of there. There's a lot of barren sand, so it's going to be like a magnet for you all.
Well, there used to be a lot of structure until they started beach replenishment and wiping out all the structure offshore.
Hi, Shep, talking fishing on air back here on News Talk 1400 WLMD. We have Captain Paul Eidman, the captain of the Real Therapy.
To compare a lot of what's going on in the North Sea to our waters is a bit of a stretch.
Okay.
We are definitely, we have better fishing here, and we have better structure, and our whole shoreline and our, outer continental shelf is completely different than what they have off of Germany and Scotland and England and Denmark and all the countries. So we're going to have to learn how to do this ourselves. There is a lot of transfer of information between Europe and here, but as far as the fisheries go, we're going to have to do exactly what they did in Block Island, and that is, you know, use the recreational and commercial angling communities to provide data for the developers, you know, before, during, and after they put these up. So we get a baseline. I mean, do we know what 100 turbines is going to do? No. But we do know that it's going to help, with using more renewable energy, and it's going to replace more coal burning, which is clearly affecting our fishing. I can tell you right now, I see fish from down south now that I've never seen before. And I know people in New England are seeing more striped bass, or seeing more fish from down here. So there's clearly, whatever you want to call it, there's clearly some type of temperature changes, and it is affecting migration patterns and our fishing. So anything that we can do to slow this down and keep fish off our coast is going to help all of us.
Comment about the striped bass growing in New England. That's not completely true, because the people I'm talking to in New England are recommending a moratorium on striped bass because it got so bad up there the last 2 years. So the fish migration argument to me is a weak argument.
I appreciate what you're doing, Paul,
yes.
And I think we all do very much, because you're willing to go to the seminar. Forces us into research. We're a multiplier group, and our whole goal with everything as regards the fishery is to make sure people are informed and can make intelligent decisions rather than just knee-jerk reactions to a lot of these things, which we end up having kind of dumped in our lap lots of times in the fishery, as you well know, being on the charter end of it.
I happen to be, I'm a striped bass specialist. That is what I fish for. And I totally rely on having a lot of stripers in the water. And if I don't have them, I don't have charters.
Cool. All right.
So to me, having a viable striped bass population is my livelihood. Okay.
Right.
When I'm referring to the fact that there's more stripers now way up north, even in Canada, what I'm saying is that they're finding conditions maybe a little more suitable now than they did in the past. I'm not dismissing the fact that we still have fish out of the Chesapeake Bay or the Roanoke that aren't going back and forth up and down the coast each year. But temperature, even a half a degree, will affect these migration patterns, because it affects the bait fish patterns. Okay, so if the bait fish shift further north, obviously the big fish are going to chase them.
All right.
So there's definitely a shortage. I mean, we did not have a great year for stripers this year. You know, we caught a lot of smalls, but, unless you were trolling or using live bait, you really weren't catching big ones. You know, there's like a hole in the middle of the biomass right now. And that's an indicator that, you know, they're off balance. Okay. Whether it's caused by overfishing or environment or any, there's multiple factors that affect fisheries. And my whole thinking is that if we leave more fish in the water, if we have an ideal spring for spawning, more fish are going to go into the shallows, you know, upstream in the fresh to spawn, and ultimately we'll have really, really good year classes coming up.
Victor, you got 1 minute.
This is directed at Robin. I heard that, like, behind Ocean City, Shooting Island, there's been 60 feet of wetlands lost in the past 40 years, and my wheels started spinning that I had this hypothesis that the sand, the beach replenishment that's flushing into the bay is causing erosion to the wetlands. And I bet that hasn't even been looked into.